Thanks, Craig. It is good to be with you this morning. I'll tell you, the way to keep from getting exhausted in youth ministry is to keep from getting those calls at 1 a.m. Your phone has this button called silent, and if you just turn that, you don't get those calls anymore. They say that you're a worse youth minister because of it, but you get a lot more sleep. You stay in it a little longer. It is good to be with you. It's good to be back to see faces of friends that we had for a long time. I'll tell you, one of the things that's really cool, though, is seeing so many faces we don't recognize. It is good to be a part of a church that is growing and vibrant, isn't it? I mean, the announcements took like 20 minutes, and like 15 of those minutes were just welcoming new members this morning. I mean, that's good stuff. It's good to be there. And Lauren and I, from a distance, we want you to know, we Facebook stalk you. We see what's going on. We keep tabs of what's happening here, and we are excited by the things going on at Chenal, by the things going on in your youth ministry. It's good, we can see, for you guys to be here. And it's a blessing for us to be back with you this morning. Let's jump into the text as we start this morning. This is from Matthew chapter 18. About that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Jesus called a little child among him and put the child among them. Then he said, "I tell you the truth, unless you turn from your sins and become like little children, you'll never get into the kingdom of heaven." Now, when you have 4 kids, life is a challenge. When the youngest 2 are twins, life is a circus. And I know that because I live in this circus every day. For instance, a couple of months ago, I'm at work and Lauren calls me frantic. "Come home right now. You will not believe what Roman has done." And before we go any further, you should know a little bit about Roman. Roman is the younger twin by a whopping 6 minutes, and he's hilarious, and he's crazy, and he's extremely fun. This, I'll show you a picture, is Roman. You'll notice he's wearing a Santa hat. I took that picture in March. That's the kind of kid that Roman is. So Lauren calls me, freaking out, demanding that I come home right now, and I can hear from her voice that sound that is paralyzed with fear. And you know that feeling you get in your chest, like when you hear that noise on the other end. I'm thinking, what has happened? Has someone gotten into the medicine cabinet and taken something they weren't supposed to? Has someone broken a bone? Has she been locked out of the house and the kids are inside? Is the upstairs flooded and draining into the basement? Because these are all things that have happened before in my house. So Lauren has been getting ready for her day. The kids are outside in the yard playing on the trampoline. And Roman walks in, grinning from ear to ear, arm outstretched, proudly to show Mom what he has found, and dangling from his hand is a dead mouse. Lauren screams, "Ah! Drop it! Drop it right now!" And Roman's face changes from like little kids do, from like elation to confusion to sadness. And Lauren feels bad, so she tries to comfort him and says, "Roman, sweetie, put the mouse down." But Roman isn't moving. "Roman, just put the mouse on the floor, son." But he does nothing. "And Roman, you're not in trouble. Just put the mouse down." But he will not budge. And so she breaks into full parent mode and does that cop voice. "Roman, put the mouse on the floor and step away from it slowly. Just drop it now." And he finally puts the mouse down, but his eyes fill with these crocodile tears. And as he cries, he takes both hands and slowly brings them up to his face. And Lauren, in her head, "Oh, baby Roman, forever unclean. No, Roman, don't touch your face." And he's bawling now. "But I liked him. He's kind of wet. I found him in the yard. I want to keep him." Oh. Lauren explains to Roman, "Roman, dead animals have germs. You can't touch them." And she washes his hand and she gets a baggie to pick up and throw away the mouse. And now Roman starts to look happy again. "So I can play with him as long as he's in the baggie?" No, he's going in the trash can outside. And Roman, with the mind of a 3.5-year-old, looks worried and says, "But what if he doesn't like sleeping in that baggie in the trash can? His name is Larry, and I love him. And I love that, because somehow in his mind, Roman had convinced himself that not only had what he found become a treasure, but that he could have a friendship with a dead mouse. And once he had made up his mind that that's the way this relationship should work, it was incredibly difficult to convince him otherwise. Kids are great, and kids are hilarious, and kids are also kind of dumb. Right? And so Jesus says then this morning that I want you to have this relationship, this faith is childlike. And I love when I look at my kids' faith, seeing how it changes and grows. And those of you who have kids or have had them, you know what I'm talking about. You can see the way that they buy into God. But here's the thing, kids will believe anything. The same kids that have a total belief in God are 100% convinced that a dead mouse can be their best friend, that I can open the doors at Walmart with my mind, and that I actually find their knock-knock joke funny after the fourth time they told it to me in a row. Are these people really the people we want to pattern our faith after? Perhaps. Perhaps Jesus is saying we should just accept anything someone presents to us. Just buy it hook, line, and sinker. Or maybe we run the other way and believe nothing at all. When we talk about childlike faith, what I'm talking about this morning is not something that asks you to believe anything you're told. Childlike faith is not about buying what someone says, hook, line, and sinker. We aren't asking for blind faith. Instead, the power of childlike faith comes from its ability to believe not anything, but to believe with wholehearted confidence once it buys in. I'm gonna say it again. That the power of childlike faith is not that it will believe anything. That's not advisable. The power of childlike faith is that it will buy in completely and wholeheartedly once they are convinced. I spent a decent amount of time recently in Hebrews, and in chapter 11 specifically. Right off the bat, Hebrews chapter 11 starts like this, and you'll see it on the screen. You know this verse. Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And the Hebrews writer sounds like he's going to talk about blind faith, but that's not what he actually talks about at all. The faith the Hebrews writer talks about isn't ignorant. Instead, it's active. This verse opens on a chapter that is filled with people who followed God in radical acts of faith. God called people from what they knew and what was possible into something that was impossible, and then God made it possible. What I want you to hear this morning is the kind of faith that these people had is a faith of a child, the faith that moves when God calls you. There is a type of faith that Scripture celebrates. There's a type of faith that has stories written about it. There's a type of faith that we tell stories about. It's a type of faith that takes wild leaps when God calls. And so when God called Abram out of his hometown, he took a leap and left his home. And when God told Noah a flood was coming, he took a leap and built a boat. And when God called Moses back to Egypt, he took a leap and faced down the most powerful man in the world. When God called Esther to stand up for her people, she took a leap and risked her life. When God called Naaman to dip in a dirty river, he took a leap and was healed. When God called Elijah to stand against the prophets of Baal, he took a leap and set off a revival in Israel. The type of faith God wants from you and me is the type of faith that trusts him enough to jump when he calls us out. That is childlike faith. And I know that sounds good. I mean, let's be honest for a minute. It sounds good to have the type of faith that will jump when God calls you. But for a lot of us, myself included, the idea of trusting God enough to do something that requires jumping out in faith is not always something I'm all that interested in. I mean, what if I take a leap and it doesn't work? What if I take a leap and I'm wrong? What if I mess up? What if I'm not good enough? Now, how many of y'all know, just quick show of hands, how many of y'all know what a trust fall is? Let's say half. Good, because if you all knew, this wouldn't be fun at all. I've asked a volunteer, Anna Reynolds, to join me on stage. I didn't tell her what she was doing. I just asked her if she'd join me up here. Can I borrow your mic for just a second? Now, for those of you who don't know what a trust fall is, let me just show you real quick. Can we play that clip?
Okay, then Lauren's going to catch you.
Close your eyes. Okay.
Okay, it's called the trust fall. Okay, trust fall. Ready? set, go.
All right, Anna, don't do that. Now, come here, if you'll come up here for me for just a second, that way everybody can see a little better. So a trust fall is simply you set your feet, you kind of lock off your knees, you spread your arms, you fall backwards. Good? Got it? So just, if you will, lock your knees, stick out your arms. Good, and then don't, until I tell you, never fall until I tell you, okay? So I'm going to count to three, we'll say one, two, three, fall, and then you just backwards. That's key, okay? All right, good. One, two, three, fall, and I got you. Okay, that's a trust fall. Now, faith, God's going to call us. She has not done anything worth applauding yet. Just wait. No, okay. So when God calls us to leap, to follow, I understand that there is a hesitation, right? There is for me too. I don't always want to fall. Now, I just caught you, right? Good. Let's do it again. Just, you kind of got it now. One more time. Just kind of fall. Good. You got it? Okay, cool. Now, what I want you to do this time is close your eyes. Okay? So close your eyes and fall. Oh, whoa. Whoa. What happened there?
I started to fall before you said fall.
Ooh. Now, I was ready. You couldn't see that.
Yeah.
But I already had my feet set. I was actually like in the process. Now, how many of us, if we're honest, have had this moment in our walk with Christ? That like we've fallen before and he's caught us, right? And then we see the leadership of God, we know where it's going, and we have this moment where we start to follow and then, oh, quickly put on the brakes, right? We step back and catch ourselves because all of a sudden, I'm not really sure that's where God was actually going. Have you had that moment? Like, what if he doesn't catch me this time? Let's try again. All right. So close your eyes, arms out, 3, 2, 1, fall.
Okay.
Whoa! What happened there?
I was a lot lower.
I took away two things that time, right? First of all, I asked you to close your eyes. Mm-hmm. And then instead of catching you here, I caught you here. Now again, how many of us have had this experience in our walk with Christ where we've stepped out in faith before? Have I let you fall yet?
No.
No. A single time? No. Have I asked you to fall yet and let you hit the floor? Mm-hmm. It has never happened. And you know that you can trust me. But suddenly, you can't see where you're going, right? And all of a sudden, I let you fall a little further than you expected you were going to have to. Anybody ever experienced this in their faith? Where I was really good that first time God called, and he caught me really good. Actually, I had a pretty good idea of where he was going to meet me, and then he called me again, and I could not see where he was leading me, and that really messed with me, right? And then I went ahead and jumped because it seemed like the right thing to do, but at some point I thought, why hasn't God caught me yet? And I braced myself. Are you with me? Is this resonating true for anyone? If not, then I need to preach a different sermon. This has been my relationship with God over and over and over again. One last thing. Here, come over here. You'll just step up there. Oh, no, you're facing the wrong way. I'm just going to come down here. Now, go ahead and turn that way. Paige is on her way out of the pew. It'll be okay. Now, no matter what you do, do not fall. Why would this be a bad idea? Because our insurance doesn't cover it. But beyond that, it's a terrible idea because you know as well as I do, I'm not going to be able to catch you, right? Like there is no situation in which it would be wise for me to advise Anna to fall backwards off this stage with just me down there to catch her, right? Here, come on down. All right, now give her a round of applause because she did awesome. Thank you. You were great. Guys, when it comes to following the call of God, like every single thing that we just did there, I hope, I would assume, resonates with you. If you followed God, even a step in a direction he's called, you know that feeling where it feels like you're falling further than you thought you were going to have to, where you're not sure that God was actually the one calling you. How many times have you said, I would love to follow God if I just knew where he was calling me, if I just knew what he was asking me to do, sure, I'd be there. But there are those times when you think you've got it and you start to fall, you start to trust, and before you know it, for whatever reason, and there are a host of them, boom. Ultimately, when I put Anna up there on that high spot, here you go. When I put Anna up there on that high spot, here's what I want you to hear. It would have been unwise for her to drop because I could not have caught her. When it comes to following the call of God, to moving in an active faith, we brace Because we trust in the wrong thing. We ask the wrong question. Our doubt is the wrong doubt. We doubt whether we can do what God is calling us to. But faith is not about what you and I can do. A trust fall is never about whether you can lock your knees and fall backwards. It's always about the strength of the person catching you. Are you with me? When God calls us, when he calls us to move, it's not a question of our power to do what he asks. It's a question of his power to accomplish it. He will never call you to something so big he does not have the power to help it work. The question of taking a leap is not a question about whether your faith is big enough to jump. It's a question about whether or not God is strong enough to catch you. Jesus says that it only takes faith like a mustard seed to move a mountain. And it's because it's not the power of your faith that does it. It's the faith in the one who can. He is big enough. When God calls you to step out on the waves, it's not your faith that keeps you afloat. It's the power of God that keeps you dry. So if we know that God can catch us when we jump, the only other question is, will he? And I want you to have a childlike faith this morning. But a childlike faith is not a simple faith. Right? We dumb it down and make it sound like kids will just believe anything haphazardly. But kids don't believe things simply. They believe it wholeheartedly. But my kids ask a million questions. And then they turn around and ask the same questions a million times more. Kids are curious. Kids want to know. And it takes a while to trust them. If you ask a child to leap, a child will be afraid. She will ask questions. She will wrestle with whether or not she can trust you. Childlike faith is deep. A childlike faith is less about what you're told and more about what you've experienced. My kids know me really well. I'm one of the two people they've known the longest. My kids have picked up on a few things about me. And maybe you've noticed some of these things as parents too. How many of you that are parents, when your kids ask for something or ask if they can do something, you say, maybe? What does maybe mean? 3, 2, 1. No. One time I've asked that question and someone went, yes. And I was like, you're ruining it for all of us. Yeah. When you say maybe, like my kids know that when I say maybe, it probably means no most of the time. And your kids know that too. My kids know what will happen if they get out of bed at night for any reason except for to go to the bathroom. When we were training in this way, I would shut the door to the rooms and then like lay down quietly on the floor. Like a hunter in a duck blind. And they would open the door, like crack it open. And when they would see me, Roman especially, he's a little headstrong, he would see me. And it didn't matter whether or not he needed to go to the bathroom when he got up. He had to right then. They know what will happen if they get up when they're not supposed to. My kids also know that I will never turn down a hug or a kiss, even if I've already had 10 and I'm 15 minutes late for work and I'm headed out the door. If they say another hug and a kiss, I will turn around and give them one. They know this not because I've told them, though I have. They know this because they have experienced it over and over again. My kids jump when I ask them to, literally. They jump to me off tables. They will run out of our van and jump and catch me whether I'm looking or not. They'll just say, I'm jumping, and they know that I will be there to catch them. We were in California last year, and we were on the beach, and there was this big rock, and they were having a blast running and jumping off this 8-foot rock because they knew that I could catch them and put them safely in the sand. They will jump when I ask them to, not because I told them they can, but because I've caught them every time. Are you with me? I've been following God a long time, not as long as some of you, but a long time. And this morning, I don't want to tell you all the reasons I've rationed out that you can trust in the goodness of God. And I don't want to argue with you and convince you that God cares about you. Instead, I would rather just tell you what I've learned as I've experienced following him. In Hebrews, the writer reminds us of this truth over and over again, that God is leading you to good places. When God calls you to follow, he is leading you to good places. But the people couldn't always figure out how God was getting them there. And they didn't actually always reach the place they thought they would reach when they started out. When the Israelites were rescued from Egypt, I find this fascinating. They were led through the wilderness, you remember this, by a pillar of smoke and a pillar of fire. And I always thought that was cheating. It always made me kind of frustrated that when they got the leadership of God, they could see it in the distance. But the more I've thought about it, the more I've realized the depth of faith it took for them to follow. Because when you're following a pillar of fire at night, or a huge pillar or cloud in the day, what can you see on the other side? Nothing. Their question was not whether or not God was leading them. Their question was always, is God going to lead us to a good place? When they showed up at the Red Sea, they didn't know they were there until the pillar of smoke moved behind them. And you have to know that for some of them, they went, oh no, what have we gotten ourselves into? I've experienced this truth, that God is leading us to good places. But good doesn't always mean easy, and it certainly does not mean painless. My life has not been painless, but God's goodness has always been present. When our family moved from Little Rock to Bartlesville, where we live now, we walked into a powder keg that neither we nor our shepherds there could have anticipated. And there was a night a few weeks in where I came home from a particularly tense time in a meeting discussing the things that were going on and sat down with Lauren and said, I think that I have made a terrible mistake for our family. I think we're in trouble. But Lauren believed and reassured me in that moment that we were where God was calling us, and we were not just where, but we were when God was calling us. And she believed that God was leading us to good places. And so we pressed ahead in faith. And it was a challenge, and it was hard, and it was painful, and it was frustrating, and it was stressful. But over the course of weeks, and then months, and then a year, old, deep wounds began to heal in our church. And then people began finding this new, fresh passion for following Jesus Christ. And then, when that happened, crazy things started happening. Like this one night, I got a call from a friend at like 10:30 at night. And he said, Aaron, I don't know what's happening, but I need someone to talk to about this. And I don't even really have words for this because I have never said this before in my life. But today in my truck, God spoke to me. And before you think I'm crazy, I did what he told me to do today. And then this amazing thing happened. He said, this is blowing my mind and I'm not comfortable with what's happening right now. What do I do? Or like the time I was in my office on a Wednesday and this lady called our church. And there was this couple who was very pregnant and very unmarried. And they were desperately trying to get married before the baby came, which was in a couple of days. And for some reason, they couldn't explain, and we couldn't explain. They didn't want to just go to the JP. They wanted a minister to do it. And so they called begging, can somebody at the church please marry us? And we think the baby's coming on like Friday. It did. And so we've got to be married like today. And against like every policy we had, we kind of sat down and had a conversation with the groom-to-be and said, this is not the way we normally do this, but yes. So they were going to show up with a couple of family members, and they were going to have a little ceremony just to kind of get it done, sign on the dotted line, and then be done. Because this was the only day off the husband had for like the next 10 days. So they showed up that night. And we threw them not just a marriage ceremony, we threw them a wedding. And like 100 people from our church stuck around. They heard, what's going on? There's a lady getting married in the sanctuary after church. They've got kids. And then all of a sudden it turned from not just a wedding that got thrown, we threw them a reception and there was a cake. And then when we got done with that, we threw them a baby shower. And 100 people these people did not know stuck around after church for something they had just heard about, a lot of them at the beginning of church, to celebrate the marriage because a marriage should be celebrated, to give them a reception where we got to eat cake together and get to know them, and then they gave them gifts to get their family life started off right. Those people very possibly may never would have stepped in our church again. And nobody cared. And I heard this lady, first the bride, she's had this look on her face for like an hour. I mean, they walked in the room and saw the reception. Her eyes just got big and, whoa, she was blown away. And I heard her mom on the phone with a relative or a friend, I'm not sure which, and she said, you will not believe what is going on right now. Yeah, no, they had a wedding. No, they're having a reception right now. Yeah, and a baby, she's like, I don't understand what's going on. She couldn't wrap her mind around it. And I'm telling you, there has been a time in our church where that would never have happened. But Jesus got a hold of people's hearts. And Jesus has been messing people up ever since. God is leading us to good places. Those are places where 2 years ago, we would have never imagined we would see. We couldn't see through the smoke and the fire. We just believed it was where God is leading us. God is leading us to good places. But just like Moses and the Israelites following the pillar of cloud and fire, sometimes when God leads you to good places, we have to walk through a wilderness to get there. When you find yourself in the wilderness, and let's be honest, some of us end up there for a really long time. Remember that the wilderness is the time that God invites you to learn trust and obedience. That obedience requires us to leap or walk on the waves or pick whatever your favorite metaphor is, but he's calling us to move in faith. For some of us, that's really easy. When you see the leading of God, you're going to chase after it the first time, like you're coming off the line at the start of a race. But for others of us, it is harder to get moving because it's been a while since we moved in faith and our wheels are rusty. What I love about the call of God is that it's essentially the same for the very young and the very old. It's the same call to the new in faith and to the mature. It's the same call to those who understand and those who don't. It is the same call to those who are lost and those who are saved. The call is simply to jump in faith and trust that God is strong enough and good enough to catch you every time. I believe that when God calls you to something, he helps you accomplish it. And I believe that he will never call you to something so small you can do it all by yourself, and he will never call you to something big he can't help you succeed. God has plans for you. He has plans for us. And he wants us to have the kind of childlike faith that trusts enough to run and jump into his arms, trusting that he will catch us. And he won't spell out how it's going to work, because what kind of adventure would that be? What kind of faith would that be? But he calls you to trust that he's strong enough to catch you. Now, I know who I'm talking to. Many of us are very comfortable. You're comfortable with your place in life. You're comfortable with your family. You're comfortable with your work. You're comfortable in your own faith. And these things, these leaps of faith, they have the potential to upend all of that, all the things we've worked so hard to achieve. And if that's your story this morning, then I want you to hear that there is a danger in a long-lived faith. There is a danger in a comfortable faith. For those of us who find ourselves in a comfortable place in life, the danger is that we will start living a life of faithfulness and stop living a life of faith. And there is a difference. A life of faithfulness continues to ask us to do what we've always done. A life of faith believes that God has something new and fresh in store for us. A life of faithfulness calls us to protect what we have. A life of faith wants more of the things of God. A life of faithfulness is static. A life of faith is active. A life of faithfulness says, if it ain't broke, there's no need to fix it. A life of faith calls us to constantly become more like God as he continually changes us into the image of Christ. A life of faithfulness is safe and known. A life of faith is dangerous and unpredictable. And a life of faithfulness calls us to keep pulling on the oars in the storm that's raging around us. But a life of faith calls us to drop the oars, jump out of the boat, and walk on the waves. For many of us, myself included, I know how easy it can be to live that life that is comfortable, being faithful to the things of God, but that often leads us to stop stepping out in faith. Which is why the Hebrews writer says this in that same chapter. It is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. One last caveat. Faith sounds good, but it sounds like a young person's game. But Aaron, I'm too old. And there was a time when I thought that 32 was old, and which is where I am now, like Craig said. So when I say I'm too old, it's not just looking as far as we can go. We say, Aaron, I'm too old. It's a young person's game. Yes, Aaron, you make faith sound like quite the adventure, but adventures are for younger people than me, people with less responsibility than me, people with fewer important things to get done than me. I'm past the point of adventure. It takes all the energy I have to be faithful to God. How am I supposed to live this life of faith? Now, say if that applies to you, like it applies to me. bless you, first of all, for continuing to follow Christ, for your example of faithfulness. But second, I entirely reject the idea that there is such a thing as being too old or too settled to follow the adventure that God is calling us to take that leap of faith. You think you're too old, too settled to have an adventure with God? Tell that to Moses, whom God called to lead his people at 80. Tell that to Samuel, who was the judge of Israel until he died. Tell it to Joseph, who was living and prophesying and leading on his deathbed. Tell it to Abraham and Sarah, who had a baby when they should have been having great grandbabies. And tell that to John, who was in exile of Patmos, but still led the church through his old age and isolation. Faith is not an adventure you age out of. It's not for 20-somethings with no kids. Heaven is not a golden sunset that you get to float into. There is no life stage where God doesn't want to grab a hold of you and use you to do something incredible for the kingdom. Whether you're 8 or 88, God is still leading you to good places. The only question is whether or not you and I will have the faith to jump when he calls. So this morning, I want us to have the faith like a child, faith that takes the running, flying leap after God. And when you leap, may you find that God is always powerful enough and always good enough to catch you. And while following God is not painless, may you always find and may you discover that he has been leading you all along to good places. Let's stand and let's sing.